is a traveling man whom we were supposed to speak to yesterday. A lot of disappointed listeners going, where was Rick Steves? Where was he?
Steve Bertrand stole him from us, Wendy.
He only got him for a little while, right, though, a few minutes. Travel writer, host of Rick Steves Europe and Travel with Rick Steves, ricksteves.com. He's going to be in town this Saturday. Rick, finally great to talk to you.
Nice to be with you, too. Thanks for calling me.
All right. Everybody in the world is so excited about you and your travel journeys. I am not a big traveler. Where should I start? How do I like to? I mean, I really just don't travel that much, and I want. It seems more of a hassle to me. I like it when I'm there, but it's a hassle getting ready.
Well, that's a very good concern. You know, I've been. I wrote my first book in 1980, so I've been at this for a long time. And a lot of people don't get around to traveling until later in their life. People have kind of a stage of their life a lot of times where they have the freedom and the money and the interest of traveling. And if you want to do it, my sort of mission, and I work with 100 people here in Seattle, and we've had the same mission for decades, is just to inspire Americans to venture beyond Orlando. A lot of people travel is Orlando, you know, and that's... That's fun, but after three or four trips to that kind of la-la land travel, there's a real world out there. And to me, that's more important than ever these days. It's more enticing than ever. There's a real world out there. We are 96% of humanity here in the United States. We think the world's a pyramid with us on top a lot of times and everybody trying to figure it out. But really, the world is an exciting playground, and the world is filled with joy and love. It's all sorts of exciting things happen, and it can be a celebration. Or you can have a mindset where you're afraid of it and you just, you know, feel like, why should I go out there? But, you know, I've spent 4 months a year every year for the last 30 years traveling outside of the United States, and I just love it. So this is what I do, is I try to help people like you,
yeah,
who maybe think it's a lot of sort of a big chore to go over there. For me, it's... When you get your sea legs or whatever you'd want to call it, yeah, you got to sit on an airplane for a while. But I just think it's the most exciting way you could spend your extra time and money is to get out of your comfort zone and gain an empathy for the people who live outside of our country, and then to come home and have a broader perspective.
That's
people
a good way
always
to put
say
it.
When you go overseas, you travel overseas, it makes you respect America more. You understand what you're living through here more. Is that true for you, do you think, or not?
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. In fact, one of the talks I'm giving tomorrow at the Chicago Travel Show is called Travel as a Political Act, and how travel impacts us in our outlook. And I find in a lot of ways, Bill, that when I leave our country and look at it from a distance, I learn more about our country by looking at it from afar. I also recognize how blessed we are and what we have to take care of. And when I come home, I'm more thankful than ever to be living here in the United States. But I also realize that we've got challenges, and other countries have similar challenges, and it makes sense to compare notes and not let commercial news shape our world outlook, and not let people that want us to be afraid and with the bunker mentality to make us frightened people. You know, a long time ago, people used to say bon voyage,
mm-hmm,
and now people say have a safe trip. I really don't know where that came from. When somebody tells me have a safe trip, I'm inclined to say, well, you have a safe stay at home, because where I'm going, you know, statistically, and I know statistics are optional these days, but statistically where I'm going is safer than where you're staying, especially if you live in a big city in the United States. So, you know, if you care about your children and you understand that the statistics, you should take them to Europe tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned, Rick, about getting out of your comfort zone and experiencing the big world that's around us. That is really what it is. You don't know what to expect. I see a lot of people on social media who go to Iceland. What's the big deal with Iceland where everyone's going there now?
I don't know. I was just there myself, and we just wrote a book about it, and it's one of our best-selling books right out of the starting gate. And there's something intriguing about Iceland. There's a lot of popular media that stokes people's interest in things, if it's Harry Potter or if it's Game of Thrones or something like that. And a lot of filming goes on in Iceland that gets people this romantic notion about it. But Iceland is just dramatic scenery. It's where the tectonic plates of Europe and America come together. So it's, you can kind of straddle America and Europe right there in Iceland. And I just found it intriguing, but part of it is it's just a latecomer to the European travel scene, so a lot of people are looking for something fresh and new. But fresh and new is also Sicily, It's Turkey, it's Poland, it's Portugal. There's so many exciting dimensions to European travel these days. One thing that's interesting for me, I just focus on Europe. You know, my company is Europe Through the Back Door, and I look at Europe as the waiting pool for world exploration. And as I said, I've been going there 4 months a year for over 30 years, and it just doesn't get old. I used to get frustrated because I couldn't see everything on one trip, and now I'm realizing I'm really thankful that I'm going back for many trips, and I always seem to have more things I want to see and experience when I fly home than when I left, because I'm learning what these countries have to offer. And it's kind of humbling. It's inspiring. You meet people that see things differently. But, you know, the bottom line is, for a lot of people, it's just, how do you do it, and how do you get the most value out of your time, and how do you save money? And I would say one thing that's interesting to remember is that time is a valuable resource, and we Americans have the shortest vacation in the rich world. So we have to be smart about our time as well as our money. When Arthur Frommer started all of this, popularization of travel among commoners, the book was Europe on $5 a Day, and the focus was saving your money. My first books were books called Germany in 22 Days, or Britain in 22 Days, or France in 22 Days, and my focus was on using your time smartly. You got to use your money smartly and your time smartly, and these days there's a lot of people traveling because you have emerging economies like India and China with middle classes of about 100 million people who can afford to go to Europe now, and they've always dreamed of going to the Eiffel Tower, and they've always dreamed of seeing Michelangelo's David, and they've always dreamed of going to Anne Frank's house, and those places are going to be very crowded, but that really doesn't matter. I mean, it's a beautiful thing now that so many people are shuffling through the Hall of Mirrors at the Versailles Palace, and it's frustrating for a lot of Americans that think it should just be their private little vacation domain, but there's 95% of Europe that never has any crowds anyways, so it's just, I think it's a great time to travel. I can honestly say it's never been safer or more efficient to travel than it is right now. A lot of people that don't know how to travel complain about things. A lot of people that don't understand the statistics and look at one-off headlines think it's more dangerous to travel. But statistically, it's safe and it's so efficient. You can go from Big Ben to the Eiffel Tower in 2.5 hours, 17 minutes under the English Channel Tunnel. It's in a luxurious sort of comfort compared to the old days when you had to get off the train and get onto the boat and get sniffed by dogs and then get onto the train again and hope you get to Paris that same day.
Rick, what do you say to people who say, I want to travel to other countries, I want to go to Denmark, I want to go to Japan, but I don't speak the language? What's your advice to them?
Well, they should talk to a guy named Rick Steves, because for 40 years he's been teaching that you don't need to speak the languages, and he validates that by reminding people he only speaks English. It's nothing to brag about, but I'm like my students. I'm the typical monoglot American. I speak English, I speak it well, and I'm thankful that we speak the world's linguistic common denominator. I'm able to organize my tours and write my guidebooks and produce my TV shows speaking English. My kids speak foreign languages, and I'm jealous because they get a tighter connection. But I'm a generalist. I travel all over Europe, and I just can't keep the languages straight. And what I think about is not how to learn a few more verbs in French, but how to communicate in what the Voice of America calls simple English. No contractions, no slang, internationally understood words. Enunciating very clearly, assuming my European friend is reading my lips, wishing it was written down, hoping to see every letter as it tumbles out of my mouth. I speak this way almost robotically for 4 months out of every year, and it really helps. But these are the kind of things I talk about in my lectures that I'm going to be giving at the Chicago Travel Show Saturday and Sunday, and this is the sort of spirit of smart travel that I focus on in my guidebooks.
And speaking of your tours, we have a listener, Dan, who has called in. Dan, you went on one of Rick Steves' tours, loved it, didn't you?
It was our first Rick Steves tour. It was in October to three cities in Italy, and it was just absolutely outstanding. Italy has been on my wife's bucket list for 50 years, and she said this met every expectation she could have imagined.
Thank you. That was the Venice, Florence, Rome tour. That's one of our most popular itineraries out of the 30 or 40 tours itineraries that we do, and that's probably the most
exciting
punch. I'm sorry?
Yes. Roseanne was our tour guide, and she was fantastic. And everybody, she picked up all the tour guides at each city, were just outstanding.
You know,
we would meet other people who were there on their own, and many of them had their book. But the fidelity and the richness we got being with Roseanne and another group who encouraged us after the formal tours were over, like at lunch or 2 o'clock, go meet the people, go meet the people.
Yeah. Well, Dan, that's the philosophy of our travel. It's, you know, meeting people is what carbonates the experience. You can see all sorts of tired cultural cliches on stage and go home with all the, you know, the those kind of images. But really to actually get out there and get to know locals, it really makes the trip much more vivid and memorable, doesn't it?
Thank you for calling,
so
Dan.
So.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. Bye.
Yeah, that's Dan's commenting on the fact that our tours have guides that connect our groups with local guides. And that's something that, you know, there's so many passionate local teachers that are in each town. And when I go to Europe on my own, I'm generally hiring private guides as I go. And we make sure the favorite guides of mine get to work with our groups as they travel around Europe. It's for us, it's, you know, for independent type travelers, we write the guidebooks. And for people that want to have somebody else do the driving and arrange the hotels and make sure the guides you have are really good, we put our tour program together. And then for those who just want to sit at home on the couch and dream about it, we make our TV shows on public television.
Rick, I don't know if this is a tough question or an easy question, but in your opinion, give us the most overrated travel destination in Europe and the most underrated travel destination in Europe.
Oh, that's a good question. The most overrated site in Europe. It's probably important for travelers to remember there's a lot of commercial ventures that are, they have box offices on the main drag right next to Hooters, you know, mm-hmm. and right next to the Hard Rock Cafe, where it looks like this is a great cultural place to go, but it's a commercial venture, a Madame Tussauds, a wax gallery, a torture dungeon, a Leonardo da Vinci exhibit with all of his experiments or something. And, mm-hmm. and these are basically kits you can buy and put up and make money selling them to tours. I think the underrated sites are places that have no promotional budgets, places that are cultural treasures that would resonate with you. A real important thing is to know what are you interested in. If you're interested in World War I history, do some studying. Know where you want to go. It's the 100th anniversary of the end of World War I now, and it's an exciting time to be there with that sort of theme. If you're interested in whatever, if you're interested in leprosy, there's an amazing museum by a guy named Dr. Hansen, who was the original sort of discoverer and expert on leprosy, which became known as Hansen's disease in Bergen, Norway. You know, you would know that. If you're interested in art done by people who were locked up because they were criminally insane or mm-hmm. considered criminally insane, there's a fascinating art gallery in southern Switzerland, in Lausanne, that you just got to see. And while you're there, if you like the Olympics, that's where the Olympics Museum is. So if you're interested in chocolate, if you're interested in the Beatles, if you're interested in tattoos, if you're interested in Monet, if you're interested in, you know, ABBA, whatever you're interested in, there's a museum for you. And I really enjoy the preparation and then the challenge of putting that itinerary together so you use your time most smartly. The trip that Dan was just on, who called, was Venice, Florence, and Rome in 10 days. 3 nights in Venice, 3 nights in Florence, 3 nights in Rome, with a 3-hour bus ride or train ride if you're on your own, doing it, connecting those. Now, to put that tour together on your own without us, I mean, our guidebooks are designed so people can do our tours without us. This is a very good example. You got 10 days for your vacation. You want to see the greatest, most intense Italy, urban Italy, cultural art experience, and so on. Fly into Venice, fly out of Rome, get 3 hotels, Venice, Florence, Rome. You buy your train ticket between each. It's very simple. You can do that over there. And then you've got the parameters all set. You got your flight in, your flight out, open jaws into one city, out of the other city, 2 connections by train, which you don't worry about. You can get that over there. You got your 3 hotel reservations. Now you've got those beautiful blocks, 2 undivided days and 3 nights in each city. Mm-hmm. And you've got to decide, how are you going to organize those days? What days are the museums closed? Do you want to hire a private guide? Are you going to make a reservation for a special dinner? You know, there's plenty of things you can do, and that's your fun challenge. And then you put together the most beautiful 10 days that Italy has to offer.
Well, you make it sound so easy and taking the stress out of it by planning what you want to do. I mean, it's a big world out there, and we learn a lot about history by going to other countries. My grandfather was born in Malvina, which is right near Venice. I would love to see that someday.
Well, you could do that very easily, and it's a lot better organized now than it was in the old days. I mean, in a lot of Europe, you've got Airbnb, you've got Uber, you've got TripAdvisor, you've got all sorts of crowdsourcing sites that can help out. The guidebooks, whether they're mine or other guidebooks, are just more helpful and better designed than ever. And history, as you mentioned, Wendy, is speaking to us. I just made a one-hour special that's airing all over the country about the history of fascism on my public television show. And European fascism back 80 years ago really is an amazing story. And when you think of the populists and the fear-mongering and the angry movements that are going around all over Western democracies today, they had their parallels 100 years ago. And you can learn about that through your travels. And that's something that I think is more important than ever, that we recognize that you know, we're all players in this amazing story, and it's history is unfolding all around us. And it's just, I think, really exciting to get over there and get to know the world.
Rick, if I do go to the Leprosy Museum, what will they sell me in the gift shop?
Oh, that's I was so shooken up I didn't even make it to the gift shop.
But
I will to give you a little practical tip. When you go to a fancy museum like that, in Scandinavia, it comes with a guided tour. You've just got to let the docents there know that you don't speak Norwegian and you'd like some help, and they literally walk you around and give you just a very caring look.
Oh, nice.
At whether it's leprosy or ABBA, it depends on what you want to see in Scandinavia.
All right.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Go to ricksteves.com to find out about his books, his TV shows. He's on social media. And please go see him at the Chicago Travel and Adventure Show. It's happening Saturday and Sunday, Donald D. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. You can go to travelshows.com. Thank you so much. Great to talk to you again.
Good talking to you. Happy travels.
Thank you, Rick. Rick Steves, everybody. We'll take a little break, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.